You can make great wine, but if you can't sell it, you're nowhere.
You know, I'm the guy that loves the cat piss descriptor.
To be a winemaker, you need to be a little bit crazy.
If we really do want to spend 20 hours a day here through harvest, why not have as much fun playing and doing as much different things as we can?
It's definitely different every single year.
We make a white Barbera, which is called Carica l'Asino, which, by the way, means load the donkey, and we don't know why.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 285. This week we feature Alwyn Fitzgerald, a Fisher King winery in Verona, Wisconsin. Change is almost always good. In the case of Wisconsin's Fisher King Winery, moving from Mount Horeb to Verona, just outside of Madison, the change was welcome. We last interviewed Fisher King's owner, Fitzgerald, 6 years ago, and this time we catch up with him in the cozy but bigger confines of the almost brand new winery. There's always something going on at Fisher King, and the new winery makes change well worth it. Well, it's been a long time, and I guess it's been since 2012, so I'm back here with Fitzgerald.
Yep.
Alwyn Fitzgerald.
Yep.
Of Fisher King Winery, and now of Verona, rather than when you were before. When we interviewed you in 2012, you were in Mount Horeb.
Correct.
And this is a brand new building, right?
Yes, absolutely brand new. Well, brand new as of last year.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you've been open in this spot just about a year now?
Year and a half. Yeah, time flies.
Yeah, it really does. Well, you had such a sweet little place there, and this is just beautiful. Of course, it's much bigger.
Yeah.
I'm sure it gives you a little bit more room to grow, too.
Yep. That was the part of the reasoning behind it. So yeah, we were in Mount Horeb, we probably would have stayed in Mount Horeb, but we were on a 5-year commercial lease, and it looked like there were gonna be options to renew, but the landlord at the time decided that he didn't wanna renew because he wanted the building for his own purposes. He owned the building, so we needed to find a new home. And I looked around for over a year in Mount Horeb trying to get things to happen, and most regrettably, I was thwarted at every turn. We kind of built our brand in Mount Horeb, and I had a preference for staying there. But by the time we got to the very end of the process, you know, we had put together a plan and presented it to the city or the village, and they somehow couldn't respond to it or whatever. And so that was it. We were out of daylight, and I had to move. So this area over here in Verona was one of my other alternate locations, and here we are.
Nice. So is this your design, or is this a building that was going to be going up?
Well, the shell of the building had already had all the approvals and everything, which was good because that's what you need to get a building up relatively quickly. But we also couldn't make major adjustments to the basis of the building. But yeah, we totally designed the area of the building for our purposes as a winery. I mean, we took what we knew from Mount Horeb and said, okay, given some constraints on the building shell footprint, how would we lay this out to be a better winery than we had in Mount Horeb from production standpoint? So that's what we did.
I remember you had the glass where you could see the cellar, but yeah. For some odd reason in my head, I remember it being a little bit...
Oh, it was a step down, right. It was about a 2.5 feet step down.
Well, you know how you remember stuff. It's like 40 feet to me in my head.
It wasn't quite in a basement cellar or anything. It was just on a different level. And we had the windows... interior windows so you could see down into where we make the wine, the production area. And I think that's a very important thing to have, people to make that connection where the wine comes from. So we did that here. We duplicated that with the windows that are behind me right now.
Even better, because this is right here. It's right part of the tasting room. You've got some really nice sofas we can't see behind you, but behind you we can see the windows into the cellar. And people love to watch what's going on when there is action.
Right. Yeah.
That's a fun thing.
I love the space. It's clearly much bigger from what I remember, isn't it?
Yes, considerably bigger. Yeah. Yep. I mean, we were actually losing business we were in a very small location in Mount Horeb, storefront right in town. The tasting room was a third the size of what this is. And, you know, we were kind of plateauing on sales there. And the biggest reason, I believe, is because the size of the room, we could only hold so many people, so there were events and other things going on that we couldn't take advantage of. So we kind of needed the elbow room.
Sure, it's tough to turn people away when you got a big crowd.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, we have live music every Friday and often on Saturday afternoons year-round. And there were times in the old place when if we had a popular musician or group in, it would just fill up quick. And it would be standing room only. And I hated to look out those front windows and watch people coming down the sidewalk and attempting to come into the building only to realize how crowded it was and to turn around and go somewhere else. So
heartbreaking.
Well, it was heartbreaking because it didn't ring the register for us. And it was heartbreaking because I felt bad for them because who knows where they came from, you know, not realizing the size of our venue. So this is much different. We can handle 150 people here at full capacity if we needed to. And we've certainly had plenty of events and activities going on here with 80 people or 50 people, you know. Sure. So we have a lot of different things going on. And the other thing is we have a really nice outdoor wine patio now. Yeah, it's right totally behind you. Yeah. We only had it up and running for a little bit last year when we moved in because with all the moving expenses and the build out, we couldn't really afford to put up the 4-foot high iron railing fence around the thing as an enclosure, which is required by the city. But this year we got it up. And so when the weather is nice, which today it isn't, but there'll be other days when people, you know, we have so few wonderful days in Wisconsin. When the weather is nice, people really want to sit out if they can and, you know, sip their wine and nibble their cheese and socialize or listen to music.
Although it's nice because your windows are huge. So you do get this great sense of being, you know, you're not outdoors, but it's all natural sunlight just about, which is really cool.
Right. Yep. Yep. The design on this building was very nice and it seemed to fit well for a winery's needs.
Do you ever plan on doing events actually in the parking lot? Is that something you can legitimately do?
Yeah, we can. I mean, the whole area, this is a business park, like a retail business park that's, you know, growing and things are getting added. There's three restaurants right near us here, right, our neighbors, and there's a Hyatt Hotel right across the street. It's all, in that sense, it's private land. In fact, we have a 5K race coming up in September, and the Fisher King, what do we call it, the Running of the Wines. And so, yeah, we've gotten permission from the developer, and the city is fine with that, that we're going to cordon off part of the front parking lot, and that'll be the staging area for the race. And, you know, people will be able to actually, as long as they're within the confines of that roped off, taped off area, they can also drink out there as well, have sips of wine and, you know, and enjoy themselves outdoors that day, assuming it's a nice day to be hanging around outside.
Oh, it will be, I'm sure.
Okay. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Good vibe your way.
Yeah.
How many cases were you doing back in 12 versus what you're doing now? Have you also expanded your production?
Well, the first, all of 2017 was a big transition year for us. We didn't get everything fully up and running until partway into the year. So those sales were, you know, roughly the same as what they were the year before in Mount Horeb. This year we're starting to pull ahead. I think what we're doing is we're still in sort of a rebuilding.
Sure.
Because the dynamic here is quite a bit different. I mean, the one advantage we had in Mount Horeb, albeit a very small space and in some ways limiting, we had a lot more walk-in traffic because wineries, as you know, are destination businesses. People do seek us out, but we had that going for us. But in addition to that, because we were on a walkable downtown, we did have, you know, other business that came in where we were part of the reason they came to the winery in town or came to town, but maybe it wasn't the main reason. So there was a mix of all of that. And so we're kind of rebuilding that. So we're trying to make up for some of that, you know, not walk-in traffic by doing hosting more private and public events. And so it's working. It's getting there, but it's been a little bit of a learning curve. It's almost like starting over a little bit.
Well, it really is. I mean, because you're in a different town. And I would think also the advantages, you're just, and for our listeners, which I didn't say, we're just outside of Madison, Wisconsin here. So,
right.
You know, you're near a major city. You should, I would think, get a fair amount of flow coming from there.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, I live on the west side of Madison. And, you know, I don't know how many times when I was in the old tasting room in Mount Horeb, I would hear my fellow Madisonians talk about Mount Horeb as like so far away. I mean, it might as well be the dark side of the moon or something, when really it really wasn't that far away. For me, it was one of my shorter commutes in my life. But by putting us, it's just a perception, by putting us in Verona, that puts us right up against the city of Madison. So we're much closer for many people. And that is good, yeah. We also are much easier access right off Highway 151. I mean, before you had to get off and go through Roundabout Row in Mount Horeb, like, I don't know how many roundabouts
they have. Oh, there were a few. I remember
six,
that.
Six, maybe, yeah, all yeah. Or whatever. I don't know what the quantity is. I forgot. But, you know, here you just get off 151 and take two turns and you're right here at the winery. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's nice, though. I mean, again, it's a cool space to come to. And you're right. I mean, it's not necessarily rebranding, but it's letting people know you're in a totally different situation here. And I can't even imagine how much fun the move must have been.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. I can't recommend it. You know, between the actual physical move and then all the money we had to deal with for the build out and the move itself. I mean, I still owe Guido's out there some money. And then on top of it, so two things. Okay, so if I'd had my druthers, druther have moved, like probably the ideal time for a winery to move would be in July or maybe early August. That's when your tanks are at their lowest, yeah. Lowest amount of volume of wine. Just by the way, everything worked out. We moved at the end of November into December after harvest. Wow. And so the tanks were at their fullest. So that was an added thing we had to deal with. And then on top of it, it's like we had to move twice because the building wasn't ready for us to move in. I mean, in August of that year, this was still dirt and they had started putting in some footings and things like that. But it wasn't until January that we were able to move in and get ourselves inspected and approved by revenue and DATCAP and all of that stuff. So we had to move everything to a warehouse first maintain it there. And then move everything a second time up here into what was then, you know, an intact winery building. So, yeah, I tried to figure out how many equivalent cartons of cigarettes I'd have to have smoked to shorten my life in the equivalent amount of days that I've lost because of the stress I had to deal with that. So, yeah, it was not for the faint of heart.
No, I can't even imagine. And you were talking about wine being left, juice being left in your tanks. What do you do with it?
Well, we couldn't move the tanks with wine in it. Right. So we pumped everything out into a whole lot of like 330-gallon cube totes, you know, the transportation totes. And I mean, we had a sea of those things in the warehouse. And unfortunately, we didn't have an up and running lab. So there was a little bit of guesswork there, but we were just trying to keep it in stasis, yeah. You know, as best we could. The wine, you know, in the very beginning, some of the wines did suffer a little bit from that move, but, you know, we've bounced back from that at this point. But, it wasn't easy.
Last thing in the world any business wants to do is ever move, even if they're growing, because there's so much that goes along with that. And there's so much that goes into owning a winery, because you're doing wholesale, you're doing retail, you're doing all this kind of stuff.
Right, yeah.
And now you've added a move to it at a really terrible point in the year.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
You look sane to me, though.
Well,
I don't, you know.
Well, looks can be deceiving.
Yeah.
I'm sane as far as I know. Wait a minute. Yeah. I think so.
Well, you're in the wine business. There's always a question about that.
That's right. Correct. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, we're here. We got that behind us now. That's in the rearview mirror. And now it's just a question of building and moving forward. So.
Great.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the tasting room here. Is this open? Are you open 7 days a week?
Yes, we are. Yep, 7 days a week right now. I mean, when we get towards the winter months, that'll probably change. But right now, I mean, I figure even on midweek days, even Monday or Tuesday, they're not that busy. But if we're here working, why not just be open? So we have the open sign out. And we get some people, you know.
So how many years have you been in business now, total?
Well, we opened our doors in the tasting room in Mount Horeb in 2011. So, in fact, this September coming up, it'll be our seven-year anniversary. So, and again, you say time flies. It's amazing how quickly that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How that went. Yeah. What happens? Is there some magical thing that occurs? Or?
I want to talk about this idea of wineries. Well, that's why we're here. A lot of wineries have opened up. It's become very, very popular and chic all over the country mm-hmm. to open up wineries. Mm-hmm. Some are making their own wines from their own grapes. Some are bringing in juice from different parts of the country, in some cases different parts of the world. I've interviewed all kinds of different kinds of winemakers. You are doing a little of both, as I recall. You're doing mostly your own grapes, and you're also leasing from around the state. Is that right?
Oh, okay. So
I should be clear on
right.
this.
Right, yeah, yeah. So right now, between 60 and 70% of our production is made from grapes grown right around here locally, like in southern Wisconsin. Some of the vineyards are quite close, others are a little further away, but it's all Wisconsin. That's, you know, way back in 2007 and 2008, I was on the founding board of the Wisconsin Grape Growers Association. So the only reason I'm mentioning that is because it's been a long time since I've been on that board or done a lot of things with those guys. But there will always be a soft spot in my heart, always, for making sure that we have good representation of locally grown cold hardy hybrid grapes in our wine lineup. So I have contracts out with about a dozen growers around the state, and harvest is coming up, and so we'll be bringing those grapes in really soon now. It's looking like the harvest is going to be a little early this year. The metrics seem to put it a little ahead. But we also bring grapes and juice in from out of state, but we're pretty selective about that. And whenever I can, I always try to get grapes instead of juice if it's feasible, because of that added degree of separation, where if you get juice in, you didn't get the chance to look at the grapes before they went into the crusher and the press. And that can be incredibly revealing. And in the past, I have rejected grapes, local grapes, because when they showed up, they were just moldy and horrible. And, you know, you would probably pick up on some of that in the juice, but not without that first, seeing that first step, it might not be quite as clear. And you might not pick up on how bad or severe something might be. So it's always better to try to use fresh fruit and grapes right off the bat when you can. But I have some confidence with several of the sources where we're getting certain juices from. As long as you have confidence with them, that's what you need. You just need to make sure that, you know, you have good experience with them and you have a high degree of believability in them, and, you know, then you're probably okay. So I have my own small vineyard, but as you know, I'm sure, Ray, it takes a huge amount of grapes to make just a little tiny bit of wine. So, I mean, even if you go to a winery where there's acres of vines around the winery, you know, that's still kind of a drop in the bucket compared to a person's production. So that's as much eye candy and the claim to, say, estate grapes as it is, you know, the practicality of contributing to your wine volume that year. So those guys, unless they have a huge tract of land, are pretty much buying grapes or juice as well.
Well, I've got kind of a loaded question for you here. You know, now that you've had this winery for so many years and your background, and what are a couple of things that you've learned? And let's forget about the move, because I'm sure the move was one gigantic education. But as a winemaker and as an owner of a winery, a couple of things that you would love our listeners to understand or hear.
It's a very, very complicated business. It's a very, very challenging business. As you alluded to earlier, there's retail, there's marketing aspects to it, there's distribution, there's basically like a light manufacturing, it's food processing. It's, you know, you're doing many, many different things, and because of the overhead and the costs involved, I have, like, right now, I think currently somewhere in the vicinity of, well, over $100,000 in wine inventory in one form or another, either as bulk wine or in bottles up here in the tasting room and in the back. Every season, the winery has to outlay a slug of money to get the fresh fruit. If you're dependent on the fall harvest and you're not just buying juice from, say, California in smaller amounts throughout the year on the bulk juice or bulk wine market, it's, you know, cash flow is tough for wineries. The overhead is tough. It takes a while for a winery to become profitable, primarily because of those things. I don't know how, if the listeners, you know, find this part particularly interesting, because it's not directly related to them, but it's, you know, the retail room is very important for the winery, because that's the only way, by making our sales out the front, that's how we're able to stay in business, to fund that. Because basically what we're doing is funding our growth with today's dollars. So, you know, you spend tens of thousands of dollars in a 2-month window in the fall, in addition to all your regular operating expenses and everything. People should feel very motivated or happy, hopefully willing to visit local wineries, because the survival of those wineries and the ability for that winery to flourish is so dependent on customers coming in and spending time and spending a little bit of money in the winery's retail stores.
Well said. No, and in the end, you sell your wine one bottle at a time.
That's right. Yep.
I was starting to allude to this, and I didn't really get to it before, about competition, because there are more wineries than there were.
Yes.
And there probably will be more coming.
Yes.
I know you create your own brand, but does this give you a trouble in any way, that kind of competition, or is that something you see as a positive thing?
Well, when it comes to retail, tasting rooms, I do not feel, I mean, maybe a teeny bit, but I don't feel any real significant threat or viewing other wineries as competitors. In fact, when we first opened in Mount Horeb, even before we opened in Mount Horeb, I said, and I have also repeated a similar sentiment here when we were first moving in, I would be happy if 5 more wineries opened up right around here. Bring it on.
Huge traffic.
That's right. Yeah, it's a cluster. It's a business cluster. You know, people don't go to Napa Valley to go to the one winery. So it's good for everybody. It's good for wine appreciators, wine consumers, and it's good for the wineries, because it brings more people into an area. It becomes more of a region, like Temecula or Napa or whatever. So as far as that goes, I don't really view these guys as competitors. And in fact, I mean, there's always a little bit. You can't help it. But wineries, you know, I was the president of the Wisconsin Winery Association up until about seven months ago. And it's all like a big fraternity. I mean, people, there's a little bit of that viewing each other askance as competition. But mostly, everybody tries to work together. It's almost like a fraternal order of people. I mean, I could pick up the phone and talk to 24 winemakers or winery owners easily and say, hey, I'm having this problem. Have you ever had to deal with this? People generally try to really help you out. There's always one or two exceptions, who the old school folks that don't get it, or they're just too centric on themselves or whatever, but they view everything as a threat. But by and large, it's a wonderful group of people, and they try to support each other. I think we all know that what elevates one winery elevates everybody. What, you know, the whole boat rises, and we're trying to make sure that Wisconsin wines are, you know, we are getting recognized now around the country as a region, as an area, and as a place that does produce good wines. You know, it's not like there aren't any bad wines being produced in Wisconsin. There's always going to be some, you know, bow wows out there. But by and large, the overall wine quality of Wisconsin, the medals, the awards that wineries have been winning, is a testimonial to, you know, the improving quality, constantly improving quality of Wisconsin wines. So on the retail side, I don't feel anything. It is becoming a little bit of a issue on the distributed side. So, you know, we were self-distributing our wines up until the beginning of this year, the end of last year, beginning of this year, and we have moved over to a distributor. And so far, those sales haven't been what I kind of thought they were going to be by going from self-distribution to a distributor. It's been a little disappointing, I have to admit. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. But one of the things that I'm hearing is that there's just so much more wine, local Wisconsin wines, on the shelf now. It's just becoming more and more difficult to get shelf space and, you know, whatever. It's just, you're right, there is a certain crowding out. And actually, it's kind of funny, you know, our winery here in Verona is located pretty close to Wisconsin Brewing Company. And so they're like right across the other side of Highway M from us here. And I had a conversation a few months back with Carl Nolan, their president, and when I mentioned this sort of thing about what's happening with the wineries, he was like, oh God, yes, we're really encountering this with our beer. You know, there's just so many more brands. Yeah, he says it's like, you know, maintaining shelf space is becoming increasingly difficult. So, yeah, so that is a potential problem, I mean, to an individual winery.
And it's also interesting for the consumer, because while they have a lot to choose from,
Right.
That can be a bit of a challenge sometimes. Right. Well, I'm going to go a different direction with you that I've gone with many other wineries when it comes to harvest, which is breathing down your neck just about.
Yep.
Do you have any issues with labor? I know a lot of wineries out west in Oregon, Washington, have had issues with getting people to pick when they need them.
Right.
And, of course, so many changes in government rules, that kind of thing going on right now. Any thoughts on that for you?
Right. Well, since I only have a small vineyard, and, you know, those grapes just... they get consumed in here. I mean, it's like less than a drop in the bucket.
But you still have contracts with other vineyards.
Correct, yeah. But I just wanted to make sure you knew that, you know, I don't have to worry about personally myself labor for picking my grapes.
Sure.
But Yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing issue. And I would encourage you to talk to some of the grape growers directly, the people who don't have a winery but just grow grapes and try to get it sold to wineries. Labor is an issue. I know we lost one vineyard. This was not now. This was like 2 or 3 years ago, because one of the bigger wineries said that they could provide the pickers for them. And the getting enough people together to pick the grapes and get it to us, I couldn't provide pickers for them. I didn't have enough people or, you know, whatever. So, it is an issue. But I can't speak directly to it, because I know lots of times when you have a 1 acre vineyard or something like that, then what you do is every harvest time you get a bunch of friends together, helpers and motivated people that come out, you know, you ply them with wine and you throw food at them and, you know, things like that. When you get into multiple acres, then you do have to start really figuring out where to get folks. And I know some of the wineries, I'm sorry, the vineyards are, well, it could be both, are contracting to local groups that have like Hmong folks that want to work and get the money from working in the vineyard. I know that out towards Vernon County, there's a lot of vineyards that will rely on the Amish to come in at a certain time of the year, or at harvest time to do the picking. I know that I don't know the organization directly, but when I was inquiring about it before, I know in Madison, there's a Hispanic-based organization that can provide folks that, you know, like to do farm labor like that. So, but it is a challenge. It can be a challenge for some vineyards.
Sure. Well, it's nice to know you have a well to go to potentially when you need the right people, especially the ones that understand this, because picking isn't for the faint of heart. It's hard work.
Right.
And especially if you're out there on a sunny day, unless you're harvesting at night, whatever, it's tough work.
Yeah, it is. Yep. Yep. Well, and then I do know there's at least two growers I know of. There's probably more, but they have a large enough vineyard that they've bought the fancy French picking machines, you know.
Sure.
And so, but in order to afford one of those highly expensive pieces of equipment, you know, you have to have enough acreage and enough, and the terrain has to be suitable enough so that these things can go through and pull the grapes off that way. Sometimes the grapes that come in from some of these, it depends on, you know, the grower and how careful they are, even with this giant rubber-tired piece of equipment. But I have seen it where the grapes get kind of beat up and there's a lot of twigs in there with it and, you know, things like that. It's a little rougher in general on the vines as you go through and have this machine pick the stuff for you.
You know, like you say, you're not going to be doing hillside picking, but the other thing, one winery I spoke to back in Ohio, they bought a used piece, and when they told me the price, I practically fainted.
Yeah.
And that doesn't include, of course, any maintenance you'll have to do, which you will have to do. You have to have somebody who's mechanically inclined to be able to fix that.
Yeah, they've got a lot of moving parts on those things.
Yeah. They're scary looking, too.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You don't want to lose a finger.
No,
right.
You don't want to. You know, we're sitting here talking about all this, but we're not talking about the wines themselves. So just if you walk through a list of what you're making these days, what you're bottling, I should say.
Right. So right now in the tasting room, we have 11. I stand corrected. We just bottled another one. We have 12 wines on the menu, a whole series of whites from dry to sweet. And on the reds, they're pretty much all dry. They have more like different bodies, you know, from light bodied to maybe more full bodied. And of course, at the very end, we have our port. Our I can't officially call it a port, but it's a port style wine. However, I made it. It's a port. I know, you know, we made it the traditional way. We doused it with aged grape brandy to stop the fermentation, you know, to flatline the yeast, and had it in oak for many months. And at the very end, we back sweetened it with a little local honey. Local from literally a local honey factory that's sort of tucked away in the woods just west of us here. I never even knew it existed, but it's there, and it's where the local beekeepers bring their honey. So when we were getting ready to buy, I don't mean to just focus on the port, but when we were getting ready to bottle the port, my winemaker and I, Bill and me, we were tasting it, and we decided, you know, we might have just stopped that fermentation just a skosh later than we should have, and it could have used just a little more back sweetening. But we didn't want to just mix together simple syrup and dump in some, you know, it'd be a little rough, you know, to put some sugar in it. So we thought, well, let's try honey. And so we went over there and came back with big totes of, you know, honey, and we back sweetened. And it's really nice. It really complements it and adds that little, just a little hint of honey flavor on the finish. So, and that's made from a local grape as well, the port. It's Frontenac.
Oh, sure. Yes. Very well known here.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we have on our reds, we currently have three reds that are made from local grapes. We did sell out of our Cabernet Sauvignon. It flew off the shelves. I was shocked how it was really good. I mean, I can say that now. Prior to this, it would sound self-serving, but since it totally bowled us over as to how quick our cab sold out, I got caught off guard. So I'm scrambling to try to get another cab in here. Yeah, so we got Marquette, the hybrid grape that has Pinot Noir in its genetic parentage. We have a Marechal Foch in the form of our Troll Town. We have a new top secret wine that we're going to be releasing sometime before the end of the year, and it's a dry red from a varietal we've never released a wine on before, and I'll leave you with that. I'm not going to say any more about it. I know, and it's really really good too. So, but there's that coming up. We just bottled Amber Dreams, which is a blush. It's not dry, but it's not really sweet. It's sort of a medium sweet. And it's made from the local grape St. Croix, one of the Svensson grapes. It has beautiful flavor. It's been a perennial favorite out there. It has caramel tones. It's really nice. I mean, it goes good with lots of different food. On the whites, the two we have right now that are made from local grapes are what we call White Whisper, which is made from Frontenac Gris, the lighter skinned berry version of Frontenac Gris. Has a nice golden color because it has some red wine character, even though it's a white wine. Hmm. And then St. Pepin. So, and then we have some others, you know, we have vinifera, we have a Chardonnay and a Moscato and things like that. So yeah, that's our lineup. That's what we're doing.
So here's my crazy question for you.
Yeah.
And I've not asked any Wisconsin winemaker this question, so you're the first.
Okay.
Is it possible, do you think one day you'll head towards a sparkling?
Yes. Yeah. But you have to do sparkling wine correctly.
Right.
And it takes money for some equipment, and it takes a specialized approach to expertise to do that. And so I don't want to just make a carbonated wine, you know.
Yes, please don't.
Yeah, I'm absolutely open to it. It's just we're not anywhere near that point yet.
Is anybody doing that in Wisconsin? From Wisconsin Grape?
I believe there are people doing that.
Okay. I've not seen it. That's
I think there are. There are people. In fact, I know there is. I just, for the life of me, I can't offhand just remember. There's probably one or two or three places that are actually doing a sparkling wine in Wisconsin.
I just say this because so many winemakers I've spoken with in different parts of the country are venturing into that area because it's so popular, because it's opening up now. People aren't so afraid of having a sparkler, or people are seeing the idea that it's not just a celebratory wine, it's something
right.
meant for any day of the week, and it's a great palate cleanser, especially before you go into a meal with other wines.
Right. But, you know, again, it's like I want to get everything all, you know, finish getting things straightened out here.
And, yeah, sure.
You know, there's a few other wines I'd like to work on, and it's going to take a little bit of, it takes some thought and some planning to go forward with doing a sparkling approach. So, yeah.
So for our listeners, again, we already know that they can come visit you, and can they order from you online if they want
yeah.
to?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. So how would they do that?
They go to our website, which is www.fisherkingwinery.com, and Fisher is spelled F-I-S-H-E-R, no C in there, so fisherkingwinery.com. When they get to our website, on the top sort of like navigation bar, there's a place that says shop online or store or something, whatever it's called. You click on that, you go down, it's a pull down menu, and you can click on like order online, and then it takes you to our, you know, our online merchant page, and you can order your wines there and have them shipped. And the only restriction on that is that obviously these things go state by state.
Yeah.
We are working, you know, we were trying to do all of this ourselves for a while, and it got to be expensive and cumbersome, and because every state is different. There's a whole bell curve as far as some states don't expect you to do any paperwork or pay anything for the privilege to ship to end users in their state. And then there's the top of the bell curve, which is most of them, which there's just varying degrees of hurdles or barriers, if it's worth it for you to go through all that just to ship some wine to the people in the state. And then on the other end of the tail end of the bell curve, there's the states that just, it's virtually impossible to ship wine into them.
That would be Pennsylvania.
That's one of them. That is one of them. But, you know, there's others. There's a few others. Very, very difficult. So we don't even bother. We certainly easily can ship within Wisconsin. That's a no-brainer. You know, for me, it's like long before I was a commercial winery owner, a commercial winemaker, I actually had a real job. that actually gave me a paycheck. I'm serious.
Remember those?
Yeah. Oh, those were the days. And, you know, I actually could afford to buy other people's wine. And I had built up a wine cellar to like 800 bottles in my basement. And which then when you start doing the math on that, you go, whoa, I started going the opposite direction because it kept getting bigger and bigger. And it was like, holy mackerel, I've got a lot of money tied up in this thing. So it moved in the opposite direction for the last few years before I opened a winery. But anyway, you know, for me, it was like, if we're going to open up a winery, there's no way I'm going to make and sell wine that I wouldn't want to drink. That just isn't going to happen. Why would I do that? And don't you hate walking into somebody else's tasting room and you taste a wine and it's like, you go, why did they bring this up to the front? You know, somebody's going to be there and they'll go home and someone will ask them, a customer, and someone will say, well, so you went to that winery over there in that town or whatever. How was that? And they'll say, well, it was okay, but I really didn't like their wine. Well, those people aren't coming back, and probably the people they talk to aren't coming back. So in the end, despite all the marketing and all the other aspects of the business, the wine quality is paramount. So that's what we've always been striving to do. So that's
quality is a big deal.
Yeah. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, and you still have one of the coolest names of a winery. I still can't believe nobody got their hands on that before you did. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah. I was amazed myself, you know, because once you start digging into things, there seem to be so few original ideas out there.
Everything's gone.
Yeah. You think you've got a unique, creative idea on something like a name, and all. You don't even have to do a full trademark search. Just Google it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it these days.
Yeah.
I understand that. Fitz, this was good seeing you again. This is a real pleasure, and I think you've been very successful, and I know you've got an interesting road ahead of you, and I wish you nothing but luck.
And I appreciate it, Ray. Thank you. It's good to see you, too.
Thank you.
Learn more by visiting FisherKingWinery.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2018.